I really don't know where that winter disappeared to. Hello, good evening. My name's David Jay, and welcome to the very first Cricket Chat Show, the very first on the front foot of the season here at Suzy 103.4. Tim's here on the other side of the panel, and we're going to lead into things for the first 20 minutes or so before our guests arrive, and we've got lots to tell you about little tweaks to the show and various other bits and bobs. Tim, I promised myself that I wasn't going to say how are you, and I wasn't going to ask you about your journey from London to do the show, so let's get going in 2019 by asking you straight away what some of the plans are that you've got for On the Front Foot this summer, and how we're going to do a little bit of a different rationale.
Yeah, well, we're going to have we've got some nice guests coming in already. We've got guests booked in for about the next 3 months, so we've got some good guests to come. We're going to be having a sort of rotating pundit coming in each particular month.
And what's the rationale behind perhaps fewer guests than before?
Well, I think we want to try and sort of cover a bit of new ground, maybe not go over old ground. We want to try and broaden things out a bit. We've always got loads to talk about on the show, and as you know, we have a sort of running order which we rarely manage to get all the way through. So it'd be quite nice to maybe sort of visit some of the topics that we don't always get to talk about.
We do run the risk, you're quite right, that from time to time we're going to have the same people from the same clubs, and we really don't want to go round the mulberry.
No, exactly.
We'd like to have something fresh and different to say. Now, I have got a few bits of club news which we'll get on to shortly. It's quite interesting, Tim, actually, that the response when I emailed round the local clubs suggests that some of them are still rather in hibernation.
Yeah, I think it's maybe just a little bit early at the moment. I think give it another 2 or 3 weeks, and I think people in the club start to wake up again after the winter.
And yet, you see, it is and it isn't, because in terms of that response, I have got one very substantial piece of club news, and we've also got things going on this coming weekend with the NatWest Cricket Force, start the season.
That's right, yep.
Sweep out the clubhouse, all of those things. And in addition to that, there's going to be a Juniors Open Day at Outwood. I've got all that on the pad for a little bit later. You mentioned pundits.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about our regular pundits this coming season.
Well, we're going to be having Jim Grant as a pundit this season, who we've had on many times on the front foot. So Jim will be joining us. I can't remember the exact... I can't remember whether it's next month or... I think it's June that Jim comes in first. So Jim will be joining us again. And obviously Jim's got a real depth of knowledge on cricket, and it will be good to have him back on the show.
Jim also has a wonderful background, broad background. He's what you might genuinely call a polymath, because he's a West Ham supporter and he's an extremely talented chef. Well, domestic cook, but effectively a chef. He's hugely into drama. He's a marvellous drama producer and director, and a superbly talented English teacher and pastoral teacher, and having made his way from the grammar school in Reigate to Sevenoaks School, he's made a huge success of his career across the Kent border, which is where he himself came from. He was brought up in Bromley.
Many cricket stories as well.
Oh yeah.
Some which can't be broadcast.
That's right. And of course he's also got the Min Wandering Club.
Yes, that's right.
Which, unlike many wandering clubs, has managed to survive into a second generation.
Yeah, they seem very successful, don't they? We've talked about them before, and they seem to be going from strength to strength, which is good.
Sons and workmates, and yet even the men are being forced more and more to play overs cricket. Let's not go down that road.
No.
Who's our pundit next month?
We've got Andy Tharp coming on next month as a pundit, and we're hoping to have Andy on again throughout the season. Andy was on last season as a guest representing Mogadore Wanderers, wasn't it? And so Andy will be coming on, and again, he's got a lot of cricket knowledge. He's been, well, you and I have both known Andy for many, many years.
30 years.
Yeah, so we know Andy very well, and he's got a lot to bring as well. So we're looking forward to hearing from Andy.
Yes, if you go back to when he started at school, it was nearly 40 years.
It's amazing, isn't it?
But that is
a long time ago.
Mogadore Wanderers, rather different from the Min. They're an old established wandering club. Although, like the Min, they started with a bunch of friends.
Yeah, they're still going strong.
Whose wives wanted them out of the house to on a Sunday afternoon. So yes, Andy came once, and we're looking forward to having him as a pundit. And with Chris Jacobs, it's going to depend on his availability.
Yes, exactly. Chris has always been our sort of regular pundit throughout the last couple of seasons, and we're hoping to have Chris on at some point during the year, but obviously he's got a lot of other commitments, so we'll see with Chris, but hopefully he'll be around sometime later in the season.
And what about guests, Tim?
Well, we've got some good guests coming up. We've got Matt Camp coming on from the Surrey Slam. We'll be talking about the Surrey Slam later on today. There was a big article in Wisden Cricket Monthly in February, I think it was, all about the Surrey Slam, and we'll discuss that later. We're going to be having Dan Feast coming on from Merstham and Essex. I think he's the is he the development director at Essex?
He's got a senior management position at
That's right. So Dan Feast will be coming on. We're going to have some guests from various other clubs. I think we've got a guest coming in from Leatherhead Cricket Club, which is my club, so I have to declare an interest there. So we'll be having the chairman of the East Surrey Colts League coming in. So we've got various people lined up, and there'll be other guests as well later on in the season, so all looking good.
I think it's a good thing that for our Beyond the Boundaries club this year, we're only just going beyond the boundary and we're going to Leatherhead, and as you say, we've got the specific interest there that it is your own club. Dan Feast turned up. I mean, I played cricket with Dan right at the end of my time at Merstham, and he was very successful at Merstham, still lives locally, but as we said, he's gone to Chelmsford in a management position, and I came across him because I decided that even though I've effectively hung the coat up, I would maintain my ECB umpire's certificate, really, because the system has changed and it's no longer on paper, it's an online application. And once you've made it and it's been authenticated, and this is a tremendous breakthrough, you can renew yourself.
Yes.
And that just makes so much sense. Anyway, I looked through through all of the possible names to verify my application. My old friend Peter Turner is no longer on, although I've got a story to tell you in just a moment about a Peter Turner, okay, who's written to one of the magazines. And so there was Dan, and I asked Dan if he came round home, and when we did the application online, and I was talking to him about his new job, and he was only too pleased to come.
Yeah, I think that's going to be very, very good. It's going to be an insightful interview, getting his thoughts on Essex and all various cricket issues, so that'll be good.
We'll have to be careful not to push him too hard, because he is a public figure, and subject to the tightrope that everybody in public life walks, not least at the moment.
Well, we've got a lot of, I mean, last season we had some brilliant guests, so we've got a lot to live up to this season with the various guests that we had in last year, and various England Test players and MPs and various other people. So it's going to be difficult to try and top that.
I have to say, one or two kites that I've attempted to fly haven't flown in that regard, which is a shame. But people are very busy, and you just wonder sometimes, you know, the old Julius Caesar thing about getting to the top of the ladder and scorning the base degrees he left behind. Well, who knows? I mean, I wouldn't... no names, no pack drill, anyway. And, of course, this evening we've got the evergreen Trevor Stevens.
Yes, that's right, and Trevor's been on... I mean, has he been on three times now already?
Twice or three times.
Certainly twice, so that'll be fun. And I think he's bringing with him chairman of Hawley Cricket, Stuart Warren, isn't he?
Stuart Warren, that's right. For the first time on the show.
That's right,
so,
yeah.
So that's our plans and our pundits and our guests, and I thought that I should probably just start off with the club news and then give you the chance to talk about Matt Camp's Surrey Slam, which is expanding even faster than my waistline.
That's right.
so let's just reflect bits and bobs off social media. I did also hear from Chris Walker, and I didn't realise that Chris Walker had given up his senior position at South Nutfield, and evidently, now that we're back in touch, that's why the results stopped coming from South Nutfield, and possibly because they 2 years ago they didn't have a great season. And it's amazing how reluctant clubs are.
Yeah, I know. It's such a shame, isn't it? Because actually, it's in many ways, it's when clubs are sort of going through a bit of a dry spell with results that you want to be getting those results in and keep publicising the clubs, because it's very easy to lose players when you start losing matches. So
anyway, we'll hope that we'll have South Nutfield back. From social media, Outwood Cricket Club's ground and pavilion reopen this Saturday, and then the club's youth academy has an open day next Saturday, that's that's the 13th, 2 to 4 p.m. with fun and games plus a barbecue, all welcome. And Merstham, this coming Saturday, have a club litter pick at the cricket pavilion at their second ground on Earlswood Common. That's the old Red Hill Ring, and that's part of this big GB spring clean.
Yes.
Ian Lamont from Merstham, who's the captain of the fourth, or stalwart of the fourth team anyway, has already done one opposite the East Surrey Hospital last weekend.
Wow. Yeah.
13 bags worth, and so they're doing that. And Laurie Nicholson says we'd love to see dog walkers and joggers there too. Now, Tim, you're Newdigate through and through. You live in Newdigate. You survived being tipped out of bed by the
yes, that's right, by the earthquakes.
The earthquake. I wonder what they're going to call themselves in the Surrey.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. I think they should definitely be calling themselves the Newdigate Earthquakes. Maybe we need to ask John Callcutt what he thinks about that.
Well, speaking of John Callcutt, it's very interesting to me that you ask around, and I'm sorry if this sounds a bit one-eyed, but it does tend to be my generation that respond with what you actually want. Let me just give you quickly some highlights of what John has sent us. Thoughts turning to the cricket season, exciting first class summer ahead, banging his usual drum, and I don't mean that in any way unkindly, about participation in grassroots dropping by 35% and Newdigate dropping their third 11 and the difficulty of keeping players on after the age of 14. They've been actively recruiting, John says. They're expecting an influx. A South African overseas player who's a level 3 coach. Winter nets have happened at Belmont School. First 11 survived that incredibly tight finish in the Premier Division of the Fullers last year. And this time, John says, they're setting out with realistic aims of gaining promotion. And this should filter down to the second 11. And lots of attractive fixtures at Newdigate for the Sundays and the midweek 11s. Junior training starts on the 12th of April at 6 p.m. and you can find the full details of that at newdigatecricketclub.co.uk, who are, let's see, heading for a quiz, a wags lunch. I assume that means wives and girlfriends and not pooches. Six-a-side charity competition and the Prosecco cricket, which to our astonishment went ahead on just about the wettest day of last unbelievably fine summer. And let me conclude what John has said. I really like this. Our chairman, James Penfold, has laid out four core values for the club: sportsmanship, enjoyment, respect and commitment.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you and I have had some very nice afternoons down at Newdigate Cricket Club, and of all the clubs in the area, they're one of the best clubs for trying to encourage people to join and make people feel welcome. And well, it's not that new anymore, but their new clubhouse is superb, and there's nothing better on a nice day sitting in the clubhouse with a glass or something watching the cricket there.
The pavilion is absolutely lovely. I do suspect, having talked to Laurie Nicholson more than anybody else about life in Championship Division 5, that Newdigate may find their slightly strange shaped ground and the long slope might, I won't say be a problem, but it might be a factor in Division 5 cricket. I don't know. Anyway, we'll aim to perhaps ask John to send us somebody new this year from Newdigate.
Yeah, well, maybe we could get was it James Penfold?
Well, that's right,
because he's the club captain, isn't he?
That's
so
right.
So maybe we can get James to come in and have a chat.
That's right. Tell us about Matt Camp and his rapidly expanding Surrey Slam.
Well, yeah, well, we've had Matt, as I said, on the show a couple of times. It's great to have Matt on. He's done massive amounts to try and get T20 cricket going in the local area. And in the Wisden that was published, I think it was February or March, I can't remember. Anyway, there's a big article in there about the Surrey Slam, with the headline, "Should Other Counties Adopt the Surrey Slam Model?" And one of the things it highlights is the fact that this year the Surrey Slam is expanding quite a lot. The Midweek League, which is their sort of flagship tournament, is growing to 72 teams, I believe. So that's expanding. They're also launching a new standalone competition on Sundays called Surrey Slam Sundays. There's going to be 18 teams this year in that particular tournament. Same rules as the Midweek League. Then they're also launching Surrey Slam Schools competition. Now, this is a competition where Borough State School Academy sides will compete against each other. Each squad will train for 8 weeks in the autumn term and 8 weeks in the spring term, between 4 and 5pm one afternoon a week. Each squad has four match days on Sunday afternoons and early evening. The idea being to allow players to play for their junior club sides in the morning, so he's trying not to sort of step on too many toes there. But they're going to be launching that for the youngsters, so that's something to look forward to. And finally, they're also launching a Surrey Slam women's competition, where there's going to be 13 teams in two regionalised groups before a 12-team finals day. And we've got local sides entering that, such as Outwood, Reigate Priory and South Nutfield. So those four different tournaments now are going to be running concurrently throughout the summer. You know, great news really for all clubs that are involved in this particular tournament. Matt's done a huge amount of work to get this to where it is now, and it's now that magazines like Wisden are picking up on it and actually suggesting that it should be used as a model across the country. So he's done a fantastic job.
As usual, Tim, we're probably not going to get anywhere near a lot of the stuff that I want to talk about, and it would be nice after 8 o'clock it's going to be now, because I see Trevor and Stuart lurking in the background, but we need to finish off with the Surrey Slam. I'm coming at this from a couple of points of view. Amongst the stuff that we probably won't get round to is the other magazine, The Cricketer. It tends to be Spurs or Arsenal, yeah. Radio Caroline, yeah. Radio London, Cricketer, Wisden Cricket Monthly. They were amalgamated for a while, of course, but Simon Hughes and Hugh Turbeville in The Cricketer are running a big investigation into the future of county cricket, being backed up in some of the national papers at the moment, and inevitably, and very quickly, major element of this whole observation rather than discussion, investigation if you like, is the lack of cricket in state schools,
yeah.
And the lack of will to maintain the relevant facilities, to afford the relevant facilities, and to have instructors who are capable of handling the game. So I think for Borough State School Academy sides to be competing sounds like a very, very...
Yeah, I mean, you look back and think that Matt Camp sort of took on this role trying to get this particular competition. I think it was originally the Village Knockout Cup or something along those lines anyway. Yeah, the Village Cricket League Knockout Cup. And Matt was involved with, I think he still is, Oakwood Hill Cricket Club. You know, there were only five teams in that particular tournament. He took over in 2011. He rebranded it as the South West Surrey Midweek Cup in 2014. And now it's become the Surrey Slam. And as we know, and as we've seen, it's been hugely successful. You've got 72 sides, and they do the full branding when clubs join. They create a logo for you. You come up with your own name of a team. Interestingly, in the Wisden article, and we'll talk to Matt about this when he comes in June, but they asked him about nicknames and for the clubs, and he said that some clubs are giving him nicknames that they have to come up with the logo. And he said one of the most difficult ones they had was Emmanuel Rum Dog Millionaires. And he said, the name's hilarious, but creating an image wasn't easy. Now, I haven't seen the image. I think I might ask Matt about it, but, you know, they do a great job, and they've got all the bases covered. You know, it's a fantastic tournament.
Tim, I have limited graphic expertise, but clearly one of the things that clubs have bought into very willingly is the fact that this stuff is supplied for them.
Yes,
and
yes.
And that there are coloured shirts and so on and so forth. And whether we like it or not, it's the first time I've seen this article in front of me now. It won't completely wipe out 40 and 50 over cricket, but it will trim it to a national state, and whether we like it or not, this is the future of a lot of recreation.
Oh yeah, cricket. Definitely. I mean, you know, we've had discussions before about T20 cricket, and you know my thoughts on the IPL and all those sort of things. But when it comes to local cricket and trying to get youngsters involved with the game and keep people's interest in the game, this is exactly what the sport needs, and it does allow a properly level playing field. The actual rules of the Surrey Slam mean that if you play in the top two divisions of the Surrey Championship on a Saturday, you can't play in the Slam. If you're remunerated, you can't play. If you compete in the bottom two divisions of the first 11 league, you can play, but you can only bat at number six or lower, and you can only bowl after the 13th over. So there's bowling and batting restrictions as well. It makes it a tournament available to everybody, and I think that is the beauty of it, and that's why it's been so successful.
And there is the potential, according to Matt, when we spoke to him last time, for expansion into Cornwall, I believe, and Lancashire.
Yes, he did mention that, didn't he, last time? Yeah,
A national model. I see that, independently, actually, of the article you've just shown me, that Warwickshire are going down the 100 route this summer.
I think we'll be talking about the 100 later, but yes, the Warwickshire Cricket Board have announced, they announced in November they'd be launching this 100 ball competition in grassroots cricket, so trying to revive Sunday cricket, re-engage the 30-somethings, as they say, but yeah.
And the one other thing I would say for now about the Surrey Slam is that Matt identifies as his example club, our very own Outward Outlaw.
That's right.
Outward were the on the front foot
club of the year. That's right, yeah, indeed.
It's very interesting that he identifies that. In a sense, there's two sides to that, because Outward has always been an archetypal, idyllic village.
Exactly.
Cricket
yes.
ground, playing the sort of fixtures that they play, and characters like Geoffrey Last and so on and
yeah,
so forth.
Yeah.
So they always have been, I think.
But and they're going to be in the Women's Surrey Slam this year with the Outward Blazes. So, yeah, that's going to be... I think they've got the Outward Outlaws, which is the men's team, and the Outward Blazes for the women's team. So that'll be good.
Our guests have arrived, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the On the Front Foot studio for the first time Stuart Warren, who is chairman at Hawley Cricket Club. Stuart, it's very good to have you here.
Good evening.
How are things at Hawley at this initial stage of the game?
We're doing okay. We had an open up day last weekend, which was very well attended. Sight screens have got to go up. Bit of indoor admin, and we're ready.
What's the workforce like at the start of the season? Is it a few diehards, or a lot of people get involved?
Yeah, we had the same old, same old faces, but yeah, there was good turnout, about 22 in total.
And the pavilion, clubhouse, call it what you will, at Hawley has expanded incredibly from the days when I was a player and occasionally guesting and frequently visiting. You really operate more or less as a social club, don't you, these days? In the
yes, way? We do. Yeah. We do now, yeah.
So what sort of things does that involve?
So we've got three sports sections, cricket, hockey and squash, but we've also got a darts team, bar billiards league and a pool league.
And those last three presumably go on through the winter and sustain the bar profits?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, what are we like at Hawley at bar billiards and arrows?
I think we're pretty good.
There's not many places that still play bar billiards, is there, really?
No, there's not.
Because they used to have a bar billiards table at the Black Horse in Reigate before it became a restaurant. I used to love playing bar billiards, and there's very, very few places now that actually have it. It's a great game, bar billiards. Do you have a league and everything then, and it's all...
Yeah, they do, yeah. I don't personally play, but they do play.
It's a good way of keeping things going over the winter, though, isn't it?
If you fancy a game of bar billiards, please come to Hawley Cricket Club.
Yeah. Forget about the cricket, just come for the bar billiards, yeah.
The evergreen Trevor Stevens is lurking in the background. Trevor, I imagine with all your relatives far afield and the travelling that you do and your golf, do you manage to get to the club much in the winter these days?
Absolutely none. Winter months are overseas, visiting offspring, holidays and so forth. I should be away really this week with the weather, but I was hoping it's going to warm up, but it really isn't cricket weather yet.
And you're here with us instead. Have you been down under this?
November this year, yes, we had a trip down under.
That's good. See any cricket while you were there?
No, none at all. Oh. I did actually play on the beach in Sri Lanka, though. Bowled one ball on the beach, nailed this local guy... Stumps everywhere and got shunted away from the game as a guest appearance.
You're a well-travelled man as well as
tough life, isn't it, for you,
it
Trevor?
Really
real
is.
Tough life
as an evergreen cricketer. So Stuart, tell us a little bit about the two senior sides and where they'll be playing, the leagues that they'll be playing in this year, and what the prospects are.
Okay, so two Saturday sides in the Fullers League. Both in Division 1. I am quietly confident. We've had a bit of a restructure. I took over as chairman nearly 4 years ago now. And we've had a bit of a reshuffle within the committee. Got a bit of young blood in. Yeah, we've just been looking at trying to make it a place that people want to play cricket, really, and try and get some new faces in, build the cult section. Last year we held our position in Division 1. We were promoted the season before. And at the start of the season, as a committee, we had a conversation about where we wanted to be, and just holding ground in Division One really was our main idea for the season, which worked out really well. I think we were third or fourth in the end.
It got quite tight as well, didn't it? It's a very competitive division. I mean, obviously Trevor was talking to us about that during the season, and we keep an eye because we run midweek results here on the radio station. Do you think realistically that's your level for the time being, or are we a bit more ambitious this time around?
I think we're a little bit more ambitious this season. Hopefully, if all things come off, a couple of new faces that are going to help within the first team, which will only strengthen the side, which then frees up a few other players to move around the two squads to try and find the best 22 that we can for a Saturday.
What about the lengthy family tree of the Renfrews? Is that still intact?
Yes, we still have some Renfrews. Although we haven't seen Grandad Renfrew recently. He didn't play last season. I think he moved down towards the coast. But he's always a fan favourite.
Well, there does come a time, doesn't there? And in fact, there's two boys in the third generation, am I right?
Yep, yeah. Sam and Ben.
And Sam's a bit of a footballer as well?
Yes, yeah, very, you know, well-established cricketers, asset to Hawley, the bear of them. Good bunch.
And it's good, isn't it, when you can hold your own at senior level when you're still relatively young. It means that you've got years of potential success in front of you.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier on that you had some new blood on the committee. Was that a struggle to get new people to come on and do jobs? A lot of clubs struggle to get new people in those sort of roles.
Yeah, I think, like you alluded to earlier, you always have your kind of your first pick that will generally turn up and do whatever needs to be done. We've just got a bit of a good vibe at the club, really. It's more about trying to make it better for everybody, and all the people that are involved now, we're all pushing the same agenda, really.
You've been chairman for 4 years, you said?
Yes.
So were you strong-armed into that, or was that something you'd planned on sort of putting your name forward for?
So both my sons are quite heavily involved in the cult section at Hawley, so I kind of got involved with the club through that. And we had a fantastic guy called Peter Moxley, who was our chairman for a number of years and does a load for the club. And just got talking to Peter. He kind of earmarked me into a committee meeting or two, and the rest is history.
Isn't it amazing how often in clubs you get chatting to somebody, and as soon as you show any bit of interest whatsoever, you push forward and you're in a role. Before you know it, that's it. You're the chairman for 4 years. So,
yes.
Yeah, but it sounds like you've got some ambitious plans then to get the club going.
Yeah, I think I kind of had a bit of a 10-year plan when I took over, where I thought I could see the club in 10 years and what the potential was, and I'm pleased to say we're kind of hitting all the markers that we set out as a committee.
And the cult section's growing?
Yeah, I think we've got 110 this year, that's up from 94 last year. Cults is a very, you get lots and lots of under 9-year-olds, and then it's about keeping those.
Yeah.
Throughout the age groups.
Do you find that they sort of flow through, the ones that you can hang on to, they flow through to the adult sides?
Yes, so one thing we introduced last year was really trying to bring the Colts through into senior cricket and giving them a more of a friendly way of playing. So ideally was our Sunday strollers side and getting some of the younger ones in, which worked really well. My son played included. He was only 11 last year, and he had a Sunday game, which is good.
And he enjoyed that, did he?
Yeah, very much so. It's all about the enjoyment for us on a Sunday.
I think that often when you see these Colts, when they get the opportunity to play in Sunday adult teams or third 11, fourth 11, they initially have a sort of worry and fear about playing for them. And as soon as they've played, they realise that actually there's nothing to be scared of, and it's a great experience for them. And most of them can really hold their own.
Yeah, very, very much so. League cricket can be a little bit rough and tumble at times. So, we don't want to put these kids off playing league cricket, but we want to introduce them as early as we can to the longer format of the game.
Yeah, well, you're right. That's the other thing. It's often they're not used to playing that length of time and being able to bat without having to retire at 25 Correct. Or 50. I think obviously there's, but I never quite understand that in adult cricket, where when colts come through, there's bowling restrictions in adult cricket for them, but there's no batting restrictions. I've always thought, well, just let them bowl. You know, most kids these days, I know it's trying to protect kids and protect from injury and stuff, but if a batsman can come in and bat all day and score 100, there's no reason why a bowler couldn't bowl 10 overs on the spin. But
I do know that Surrey are really pushing the kind of health and well-being and the strength and conditioning training even for the younger age groups now. So, you know, hearing that an 11-year-old is going to do an hour's worth of strength and conditioning training seems very alien to me.
I worry very much indeed about that, because I've seen over the years so many. I mean, Trevor knows I was involved with 16, 17, 18-year-olds for 25 years, and I've seen so many boys, rugby training, I've admittedly more than cricket, I suspect, but put through these quasi-professional regimes and ending up unable to play because they're thoroughly injured. Now, that's not quite the same thing as sorting out a mixed action or whatever, which is something that probably needed to be brought far more closely to people's attention than it was in the old days. But it always struck me that we turned out what a lot of people would regard as a finished playing and physical article at the end of their school days at the age of 18, and then you see how much a young man develops physically again between the ages of 18 and say 22, 23, and I'm with you all the way. I think alien is right, and 8-year-olds, I'm sorry, to me that's a nonsense.
Well, I mean, it is a fine line, isn't it, to try and make sure that they're looked after and that they can actually then play full adult cricket. So how many was it you said you had? How many colts?
110, I believe, this year.
That's good. And you've got presumably parents are very supportive of the whole structure. And
we've been really, really lucky with our parent volunteers that have kind of, you know, each of the age groups. I mean, and this year we've got two under 15 sides. We're running under 16s this year, so we have expanded. We didn't have the under 16 age group last year, so.
I think that's a tremendous step to make, because time and again with clubs from all over the area we talk about this drop off at the age of 14, which is when the longer game comes into play, isn't it, realistically? But if you can keep them together as an under 16, of course you've got the Sussex Festival, haven't you?
We do.
For Hawley, which helps.
Yep, we do alright in that.
And all of these things, and I think perhaps that's a bit of a progression. I have to say, from the purely admin point of view these days, Katie Field is number one correspondent as far as conveying exactly the sort of things that we want and that we can use on air and to give publicity, and that applies as much to the first and second teams. We don't always get Sunday reports, but funnily enough, I don't know, you mentioned the strollers, Stuart. Does Sunday cricket at Hawley still have a profile of its own? Is it relatively important? Because a lot of clubs just don't seem to want to have their Sunday cricket in the papers or mentioned to us, or it's just a bit of hit and giggle, you know?
Yeah, we hold our Sunday strollers in quite high esteem, really. It's how I started playing cricket again with Hawley. It's just a fun atmosphere. You know, if you like cricket and you like playing cricket, and you know, you're not the best, it's a great place to come back, because dropped catches, you know, getting ducks,
doesn't matter.
No, it's all about having fun with your mates, really, for us, and I think we do that pretty well at Hawley.
And that's the key for the juniors, isn't it, as well? Enjoyment has got to come first. Reading between the lines, some of your reports, I think the East Surrey Colts League and these cups that they play and get a little bit competitive when you get towards the end of the season.
Very much so.
But there we are. It's just a matter of restraint, isn't it? And from my point of view, hoping that, you know, they don't suddenly decide that sledging is the way to go, which leads to the handbags at 10 paces.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Senior cricket that you've alluded to.
And we've talked about that before, where the difference between Sunday cricket and league cricket, and even when you have, excuse me, I've played league cricket, you know, sort of third 11 standard, but even at third 11 standard, you get a lot of sledging and all that sort of stuff, and when you're putting youngsters through that, and once they get used to it, it's fine, but initially sometimes that can be a bit daunting when they're up against adult players who are, you know, giving it out quite a lot. So it's quite nice to have that Sunday team to bring them through, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the teams that we select are kind of Colts to play for or play up in the senior side are all kind of hand-picked, so we never really, we always know the oppo that we're playing, so we know that it's going to be a friendly affair. But no, I mean, I've witnessed last season, you know, at Colts matches, under 10, under 11, under 12, sledging between 10, 11 and 12 year olds, which, you know, kids walking off in tears, it's just not a nice thing to see.
And that does put a lot of kids off. They will just stop coming. If they're not happy with it, they'll just stop coming. And you lose somebody who could potentially be a really good player.
For me, it's about instilling spirit of the game. I know we'll talk about it, and it's put out there, but that is a big thing for me.
Do you when you put two Saturday teams out, don't you?
Yep.
Do you ever find you struggle to fill both sides each Saturday?
Last season we didn't. The season before we did a bit. Season before that, yes, very huge struggle.
Yeah, something we've talked about before, and it's, I think it's something that affects all clubs. It's difficult for people to commit, isn't it, these days, to that length of time?
Yeah, we've changed the process of how we invite people. You know, the selection message goes out, if you like. So we now send a text message 10 days before asking for availability. We then meet as a selection committee a week before, 7 days before, and then on the back of that selection meeting is either, are we in trouble or are we okay? And fortunately, last season, and hopefully going forward this season, we were okay. So, you know, there was no midnight phone ring arounds.
Is there any plans at any point in the future to maybe start a third 11, or do you think that's slightly beyond the sort of personnel that you've got at the moment?
It's not on my radar at the moment. It's something I'd like to do.
It's trying to fill, isn't it? It's trying to fill.
Yeah.
There's no point in having a third 11 if you're going to be turning out seven or eight players each week. So
And you just need the extra bodies, you know, within the committee to try and help manage that.
Yeah, I think it is quite a big step going towards three Saturday sides, and I think it's something that is, you're quite right, if you're filling two sides, and in many ways it's better to make sure that there's two healthy teams rather than three which are struggling for players. So
it's always a juggling match, because, you know, the first few games of the season you might have 40 people that put their name down to play, and then you're letting 18 people down. So what we do say is that if you make yourself available for a Saturday, we guarantee, and we can't get you a game, we guarantee you a game of cricket on a Sunday. And that's our promise to our players. Our club captain Nick Wanton does a great job at the organising additional games, changing games, rescheduling. I mean, you know, absolutely fantastic job.
You're not involved with it. Are you involved with the Surrey Slam at all?
Yes, we are.
You are?
Yep.
Okay, we were talking about that earlier.
So
were you in it last year?
Yes.
How did you get on last year?
All right. Yeah, we did all right.
Yeah,
it's good. It's a good format. I'm a huge advocate of the Surrey Slam. I think it's great, as long as it doesn't detract from other things.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of rule changes, certainly in the Surrey leagues. I don't know if you've seen them, about pitch lengths and playing formats and what they're doing for the under-8s now.
They seem to tinker with it every year. There's all these things that they do which never quite under. I mean, David and I went to rather than just not just the league changes, but the law changes, we went to the umpires thing, didn't we?
When the 2017 laws were
published. And that was a very, very difficult night trying to get to grips with all that. But yeah, you're right, it's difficult when they tinker with it.
And from my perspective, you've also got, and we're not going to get onto the 100 tonight, but you've got all this jiggery pokery at senior level, at professional level, and you know, some of it's changes. So I've some sympathy with pitch lengths for very young players when they're involved in you know, these little they play pairs, don't they?
Yep, that's right. Yeah,
and so on. I mean, I think it's got to be, you've got to be able to get it down the other end, haven't you? Make it resemble cricket. Stuart, if I may, because as ever, Times Wing Chariot and all that. Return to your 10-year plan. Is there anything much that you're logistically able to do with the facilities at Hawley? Is there anything that you can do by way of buildings or the ground or whatever?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So last year we started some grant funding to try and renew our net facility. I noticed Newdigate had a lovely new clubhouse and a lovely new net facility, so I started looking into how we go about as a club getting, you know, can we get some money together to be able to put a net facility together, which we've done really well. We've hit a bit of a stumbling block. I don't know if Brexit's got anything to do with it, and but we're not quite there yet. So this year's out of the question. I was hoping to have it done by the start of the season. So moving forward, hopefully this time next year, we will have our new built net facility.
Excellent.
Yeah.
In terms of replacements, it must be very difficult for any club, but certainly Hawley, to find any way of replacing a stalwart like the late Dennis Kirby.
Yes. Yeah. Really sad news. So we lost Dennis last year. He'd been a member of the club, I think, 35 years. Been the cricket secretary for longer than I've probably been around. He was a huge, huge part of the club, and is very sadly missed.
I go back to selling turkeys at Christmas at Tandridge Court Farm with Dennis. That's 1973, is I think when I first met Dennis. Yes, and a great, great friend to me, and an immaculate scorer, and real club man. And Trevor, they're few and far between, aren't they, these days?
Difficult to replace, I think. Probably a generation apart. I think he was born into the club, as it were, when he came from... where did he come from? Oxford, Godston. Didn't he? Yeah, Godston Green. Yeah, Dennis was Dennis, and that was the thing we loved about him. You know, you could never actually judge his mood or his temper, but sometimes it was great, and other times, well, you knew to stay clear. But at the bottom of his heart, the cricket club was foremost. The scoring, the averages and everything, you know, everyone loved the end of season revealing of how many they've got and so forth. But, you know, Dennis's presence and his way, it was, yeah, we won't be able to replace it, unfortunately. So, he leaves a legacy, really.
Yes, indeed. Dennis Kirby, rest in peace. Stuart, you've got about 30 seconds for any final messages.
No, I'd just like to wish everybody in the Fullers League a good season. Looking forward to playing Shepparton again. They've dropped down into our league, so I'm looking forward to that.
Jolly good. Stuart Warren, chairman of Hawley Cricket Club. Feel free when the news comes up to swap seats with Trevor, and feel free to chip in as we go along. But for now, it's lovely to see you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Always good to see our friends from Hawley. First time on the show for Stuart, and I'm sure it won't be the last. Trevor is going to move into the pundit's seat now, and we're going to chew over the national and international game, and probably one or two other bits and pieces as time goes by. David Jay this side of the mic, Tim Bowling the other, and we're heading into our second hour with one or two bits and pieces slightly more general, but I'm going to actually kick off with a couple more domestic bits and bobs. Tim, I promised you that I was going to tell you a story about, well, I think it's our old friend Peter.
Yes,
Turner,
you did.
Who was assistant bursar at the grammar school for many years, and a big noise in the Umpires Association. I don't know for certain that this is he, but it's a letter to one of the magazines. I've enjoyed the coverage of the Women's World T20. I was forced to turn off the radio yesterday, though, as I became increasingly annoyed by the ridiculous terms used by Natalie Hermanos. She seems unable to say third man, so has abbreviated it to third. That sounds ludicrous. At one point, she even said short third to compound the nonsense. These fielding positions have been in use for decades. Here's the strap line. If she has a problem saying man, she should not be commentating on the BBC. Trevor Stevens, good evening and welcome back.
With a lead like that, I don't think we should say too much, David.
Well,
I'll be careful.
We will talk a little bit, no doubt, about women's cricket as time goes on. One other little domestic, because I should ask you, how are David and Richard? Is David playing any cricket, and what's Richard up to this summer?
Richard is certainly playing cricket. He has actually been appointed vice captain at the Priory, so that's a little bit of responsibility for him. So I think he's looking forward to that. I don't know how many matches he'll get in control, if any. David, reluctantly, as other things like moving house and so forth, has only had a few games. I think he's filled in on about the fourth team. The way it works in Australia, they all have enormous numbers of groups. groups, and you can turn up on a Saturday and then you've got to play the following Saturday because it's over two weekends. So the commitment is even worse than it is here, where we have to start at sort of 10 o'clock. So he's sort of fallen a little bit by the wayside, unfortunately.
Of course, I'd forgotten that he is down under for a moment. I sort of got Ireland lodged in the back of my mind. That's about 15 years ago or something.
And a bit closer.
Yes, quite. Anyway, that's very good news, and do pass our good wishes on.
Thank you.
When you speak or see either of them next. Gentlemen and Stuart, do please feel free to chip in. It's been a fascinating winter. England falling at the last hurdle in the Women's World Cup, which was a strange sort of thing, but we can perhaps come to that later. And then as far as the men are concerned, we've got the IPL going on now. We had the Big Bash in the middle, and I say in the middle because we had Sri Lanka and we had West Indies. I'm quite happy to take a back seat on this discussion. I have got a few stats and bits and bobs in front of me if needed. What do we think we've learned about England as they are now and about their prospects going forward to the World Cup in England this summer and then the Ashes?
What do you think, Trevor? Kick us off.
Well, I think the potential is enormous. On their day, they can clearly beat anyone in the world, but as we all notice, there seems to be an occasional off day. And whether they recognise it early enough or not, they, you know, have been sort of labelled a one-trick pony on the batting front. That if the conditions aren't quite in their favour, have they got a plan B? I think they're good enough to actually accommodate that and react to it. English conditions, obviously, you're going to have more variations than you do in some of the overseas places, so maybe that will be a bit more of a challenge, but it may work in our favour that they might concentrate a little bit more on that. But I've got quite high hopes. I think the only downside is, you know, it's one game at a time and anyone can have a bad day.
It was a funny winter, though, wasn't it? Because we kicked off against Sri Lanka and we won the one-day series 3-1. We won the Test series 3-0. And it seemed that we were on a big roll and that we were almost sort of unbeatable. Then we went to the West Indies and everything seemed to come apart. I know right at the end we picked up a little bit, but the West Indies series we lost 2-1. And it all seemed to be a little bit less optimistic, didn't it?
Yeah, I think the problem was that Sri Lanka are on the a downward curve, whereas the West Indies are certainly on an upward curve. And I think it would have been an interesting story the other way round. Maybe there was a little bit of complacency in the West Indies.
Yeah.
I know everyone will deny it, but certainly I don't think they were expecting such a challenging performance from the West Indian team, and I take my hat off to them. It was quite enjoyable watching the West Indies being a little bit vibrancy there.
Yeah.
I've always said that world cricket needs West Indies and world rugby needs Wales to be doing well. I've absolutely no doubt about that. They are the two iconic sides in my view. I suppose we have to go back to the who went to Sri Lanka to play a one-day international series in what was virtually the monsoon season. I mean, they might as well not have bothered.
Yeah, that was a very, very odd decision on scheduling, wasn't it, to put it in that particular period.
Well, money rules on scheduling, unfortunately, and that's the way of world sport.
Indeed. And then the Test series, I was just going to make the point that on that first morning, and the captain saying we're going to play without fear, and I don't know exactly what the score was, but it was not many for lots, wasn't it? And was it Ben Foulkes that dragged us out of it?
Yeah, Ben Foulkes scored 107 in the first test. Keaton Jennings got 146 not out, which seems a long time, and a long, long time ago now, doesn't it, when you think back to that? But yeah, I mean, Moeen took four wickets in each innings, and it's difficult to believe now that Foulkes is struggling to get back in the side, and Jennings scored such a good 100, and now, all right, he was back in the side late on in against the West Indies, but really not the player that people perhaps thought he was going to be after that particular innings.
I was just going to say, I think the problem with Jennings is it was too little too late.
I think
he's had his chances and he's not been able to kind of work with those chances, and you know, a big 100 on one of your last games for the England squad, yes, shows you have got talent, but also shows what we've been missing for so long.
Yeah, I think the problem Jennings has got is that he's technically, he's been found out, and he has these issues outside off stump, constantly the same thing, and it doesn't take much for a bowler to actually take his wicket, you know. So I don't know, it's going to be difficult. I'm amazed folks is struggling to get back in that side, given how well he played.
Well, I think it's the perennial issue with folks, you know. What do you want, the best keeper, yeah, or someone who bats? We come back to the Alex Stewart sort of scenario. Personally, I think when you looked at folks in Sri Lanka standing up to the stumps most of the time with slow bowling, you know, he showed the difference it makes over someone who's learned to be a very capable wicket keeper, but is not quite the natural. Yeah. So my view would always be you go for your best keeper because he'll earn you an odd wicket here or there. But I think the selectors have gone back with Bairstow, and unfortunately, folks, he's going to struggle. I don't see him as a number three, though.
No, I think there was a thing in the paper this morning where folks has been talking to Ed Smith. Whether he's spoken to him yet or not, he's going to speak to him. But the interview was along the lines of that he wants to find out what it's going to take for him to get back in the side. And I'm not quite sure what Ed Smith can say to him to make him feel any more positive about getting back in the side. Let's be honest, he got in the side originally because of an injury.
Indeed.
And I suspect that's the only way he's probably going to get back into the team, which is
a
shame.
I think,
like you, I would pick... I mean, I'm a wicketkeeper, so it's wicketkeeper's union, but I would pick a keeper.
And I'm a slow bowler, so...
yeah, you know.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, clearly in Sri Lanka, in spin-friendly conditions, and our three spinners out-bowled theirs by several country miles, and the keeper was a factor in that. So what have we actually learned from the winter? Well, we've learned that Keaton Jennings is probably not up to it. Let's discuss what's going to happen in the summer a little bit later on, if we may. We went to West Indies. Interesting, I didn't really think about this until I had a look today in preparation for this show, that after the autumn, the pre-Christmas period, when Sri Lanka were annihilated at home by England and West Indies wiped off the park in Bangladesh, Sri Lanka have now been to South Africa and beaten South Africa,
yeah,
and West Indies have rolled England over. There's no real pattern to
no,
it, is there?
No, it doesn't. There doesn't appear to be, which I guess is good in a way, because it means it's slightly less predictable. But
except that England keep on being 70 for 7.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I mean, after that first test, you know, when England were all out for 77, you think, and we lost 318 runs. That, I mean, I don't think anybody saw that coming. I think when we sat here at the back end of last year and talked about prospects for the West Indies, I'm pretty sure we both said, yeah, England are going to walk this.
Yeah, that
West
was my
Indies
prediction as well. But
easily. And that turned out, you know, your Holder scoring 202 not out, batting at, what was he, number 8 or something?
Seven,
you know,
no,
yeah, you know, it was just amazing, really.
What do you reckon, Stuart?
I would like to see England restructure their batting order. I think, you know, I honestly think they we have the depth of squad there now. There is lots of players in that pool that you can choose, and I think we can be very quick to pick, you know, the long running team that's been playing together for so long, rather than actually let's try and get a bit of fresh blood in, let's move it around. I mean, I'd like to see folks with the gloves. I think he's the best keeper out of everybody. I think he can bat, but I think there is a place for Bairstow in as a dedicated batsman.
Yeah, I've got two strands going here now, so I'll try and keep them both going. I was going to say just now, when Trevor was talking about folks, clearly managing Bairstow is an important thing and not the easiest thing
that the England
staff have to do.
No, well, I think there was rumours that when, was it Folkes got the injury that took him out of this? Was it Folkes when he was injured? Bairstow was a... And again, rumour and whatever, but certain people on Twitter were claiming that Bairstow looked rather pleased on the sidelines as he warmed up with the gloves on again. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. There was lots of talk about the fact that Bairstow had said, I want to be the England keeper, and was I think his reaction when he scored that 100, you could see that tension and that sort of determination there, which you don't often see when players score hundreds, maybe when they get a double 100. So I think you're right, David. I think he's, I mean, let's be honest, he's been as for his personal life, he's been through the mill with his dad and everything. So maybe he has to be given a little bit of leeway. But, yeah, I think probably a very difficult player to manage.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. Now, another strand in this is the way in which West Indies didn't just revert to traditional West Indian cricket, in that there were some quicker surfaces and some fast bowlers who ran in and hit the deck and said the odd thing they perhaps shouldn't have done, but there we are. Good for Joe Root. It's interesting, isn't it? That's probably what he'll come back from that series famous for his put down on the stump mic to Shannon Gabriel.
Yeah.
But, yes. But alongside that traditional, much more traditional West Indian approach to the game, and it looks as if this lad Hetmyer is going to be another one who follows in those footsteps and blasts it out of the park a la Richards. But you mentioned the captain who has matured incredibly in a very short space of time, beginning to weld aside, Tim, that is not reliant on Christopher Henry Gale, as the commentators insist on calling him, and the rest of those, let's face it, people who are now playing as has-beens in the IPL and what have you.
Yep.
And it's clearly becoming his team. And for a young captain who has achieved that, with the help, let's be fair, of Reigate's very own Johnny Grave as chief executive, who still isn't coming on the show.
I was going to say, one day we'll get him on.
I said I'd had my failures this winter, but the fact that Holder has done, and then, you know, played that amazing pure test match innings in that he batted time and then at the end of it changed tack to T20 and hit it out of the park here there more often than even Richards ever did in one test innings, I believe.
But I think, I mean, the fact is that West Indies won that series because they were able to defend with the bat and they were able to bat time. Yeah, they can turn it on when they need to, and Holder did that at the end of that particular innings. But when you're in, you know, getting towards a double hundred, it's a lot easier to suddenly start opening up. But they were playing proper test cricket.
Well, and they were playing as a professional team, weren't they, as opposed to the West Indian spirit.
Yeah.
And I think they'd lost their prima donnas. They came up as a team together, and I think they all respected the captain, and you're right, he got them playing as a team rather than a bunch of individuals, which they had been for so many years.
That's right, and he's led from the front, and he's managed to get that score in the first test as well, which was crucial, because it set the whole tone for that series. And, okay, we won the third test by 200-odd runs, so it was a pretty big win, but, you know, again, dead rubber game. We'd already lost the series 2-1, and seeing the West Indies do so well, even though it's against England, as you said earlier, David, I think it's brilliant seeing West Indies perform.
And we won the T20, and it was probably just about right, I think, that the ODI series was shared.
Yes, two all, wasn't it?
Yeah. Two each. But off the back of that, I was going to ask this much later, but as usual, we're going to run out of time way before we probably even get to it. Gentlemen, let me ask you the question. Does international cricket need 2020 when there are franchises all around the world doing it superbly?
Well, you know what I'm going to answer, because we've probably spoken about this before, but if you're in any doubt, then I think that T20 cricket should have nothing to do with international teams.
And I'm in the other camp. I think people, 2020 is a commodity of cricket, and they want to see it played at the highest level.
But do you not think that the franchises fill that particular void?
No, I don't. I think it's a different dimension. The franchises are mixed, and then you've got the countries. So we all have allegiance to our country, so we want to see our country do well. And I think that's why I would like to see it continue. Yeah, I don't think it can be replaced by the commercial franchise arrangement.
Stuart, have a casting vote.
I'm a big advocate of T20 cricket, so I'd like to see it continue with the international squads. I like it.
I'm outvoted.
One of the things that I was going to put on the table as an adjunct to the West Indies and sort of leading then towards the franchise cricket, what is our view, Trevor, you have a much closer association with and knowledge of Down Under than the rest of us here tonight, I imagine. Did England players, after what must have been a fairly strenuous tour in Sri Lanka, heat and conditions, all the rest, did they really need to be at the Big Bash?
I think it comes down to how much you want in your pockets. You cannot resist the temptation of the amounts involved.
No, well, that's
a short time span. You know, we've got the case of Rashid, who had turned his back on international cricket. You know, he's back in the fold and doing well.
But you can understand the annoyance of Martin Moxon when, you know, Rashid is signed up to a white ball contract to Yorkshire, and then England tests team comes knocking, and Rashid suddenly decides he wants to play, fair enough, for the England test team, and he goes and plays for the England test side right in the period where he's meant to be playing white ball only cricket for Yorkshire. And Yorkshire has spent, in their terms, a lot of money. All right, it's not IPL standards, but it's a lot of money for Yorkshire to sign him on that contract. You can understand why Martin Moxon is frustrated that, you know, if players make the decision to go white ball only, to then suddenly decide, yeah, I'll play for England again. It's very difficult for the counties, isn't it?
Oh, I feel sorry for the counties. Yeah, I think the way it'll end up is they'll only employ the star players for short periods in the, well, 100, whatever the hundreds is. I don't agree with that either, but or selective games. And then these star players will just be associated with the international scene.
Well, there's several of these players who are not going to be playing Red Bull cricket this season. You've got Nottinghamshire, Harry Gurney, he's retired from County Championship, he's going to focus on limited overs. Colin Ingram, Glamorgan's former South African batsman, he's signed for 2 years of limited overs cricket. Somerset, Peter Trago, extended white ball contract. Max Waller at Somerset. So there's a long list of these players that are now seeing that's, for them, less physically demanding, more lucrative. How's that going to affect the county championship? That's going to struggle. It's struggling anyway. This is the problem with these contracts.
I've been waiting to ask you this, and I'm going to ask you now. Who was the sole English representative in the Big Bash winning side, and what was the name of that side?
Oh dear.
Shall we ask Stuart? Over to Stuart.
Yes, I have to say I don't know the answer.
Nor do
Clearly
I.
Clearly you don't either, Trevor.
I received a New Year call, as I always do, on the Australian scheme from a very old friend of mine who's nearly 87 and who played a bit of cricket with us. He was an uncle of one of my fellow cricketers at the back end of our wandering sides time. And when I started going on about the 100... Frank Kilby in Queensland clearly hadn't got the faintest idea what I was talking about.
No,
and I think that probably applies to the Ram Slam, the Bangladesh Premier League, the Caribbean Premier League and the Big Bash as far as your average English cricket fan is concerned. It was Harry Gurney. And it was the Melbourne Renegades. And I think the point about Gurney, looking at what I've got in front of me, is he's 32. He's been around the circuit a long, long time. And as Trevor says, there's money to be made. And, of course, off the back of the Big Bash, he's got an IPL deal.
Yeah.
Did it do Joe Root any good going to the Big Bash?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? As you say, it's about the money. I mean, you're right, Gurney's playing for Kolkata Knight Riders, so he's going to earn some serious money. And you look at some of those contracts, and they're £1 million for 6-7 weeks' work. You know, but I don't know, did Joe Root benefit? I'm not sure.
95 runs.
I was going to say, financially, he probably benefited. Yeah. I don't think he benefited with any... with the bat. I mean,
I'm surprised that he was actually given a contract, to be honest.
He was working very hard, wasn't he, to prove them wrong when they didn't buy him for the IPL the year before. I think that's what that was all about.
Point to prove, I think.
And interestingly, who's the most expensive English player in the IPL? Do we know that one?
Stokes.
Jofra Archer?
Nope. Sam Curran.
Is that right?
Sam Curran is the most expensive English
player
in the
million?
IPL. I don't know what the money is.
I bet he's must be over a million
but,
then.
The most expensive overseas player at the 2019 draft. And yet, his brother Tom succeeds beyond all expectations, one of the top five players of the tournament in the Big Bash, and Sam goes to the Caribbean with England subsequently and disappears almost without trace.
Yeah, it is odd.
Is there, I mean, I would hate it to be so, is there an inkling somewhere perhaps that Sam Curran might just have been a meteoric flash in the pan?
I hope not. I hope not, because he came onto the scene and he just seemed to have that spirit that perhaps we needed, but I hope he isn't. I hope he's just going through a little bit of a dip and, you know, he's going to be back, but I don't know, it's very difficult, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't see his bowling as being earth-shattering going forward. I can't see where it's going to develop
on. Is that because he's not physically imposing? He's a small player, isn't he? And he doesn't...
Low skiddy, yeah. Batting, yeah, I think that's got potential. I think one of the IPL, whoever he's with, he opened the other day. He got a few quickly. Mm. But, you know, does that sort of compromise your ability to play 50-over test cricket? I think it does.
Yeah.
Because I think you're exposed very quickly, and shortcomings are even picked out very quickly in the IPL, and that's why I think some people who you wouldn't think were performers in the IPL tend to be so. Mm.
Perhaps it's the case that Sam Curran has been going downhill ever since, unlike his two brothers, he didn't turn up for the title-deciding clash at Reigate Priory. Looking forward now, as we must, to this jam-packed English summer. We've just discovered that the semi-finals of the Royal London One Day Cup are on the 14th of May, which really is a quart into a pint pot, I suspect. But, Stuart, you mentioned earlier about fresh blood, and the thread that I didn't pursue among those I was talking about was the business of central contracts and the way that they've tended, for all the good that they've done, to turn England into a little bit of a 19th county. I wonder, let's ask you, if we may, Stuart, where would you be looking for potential fresh blood from outside those central contracts?
I think you've got to look at the county game, haven't you, and see who's performing and who's not performing. I try and watch as much cricket as I can, and looking at some of those county games last year, you look at the standard of that against you know, some of England's poorer games, and you would question every player in the England side against what you're watching on TV. So I think I think the selectors need to look far and wide, and maybe they need to think outside the box about what they need.
It's that step up, isn't it, which seems to be the problem. Now, if you go back, and I'm not a great advocate of going back after a couple of chances, if you were to go back to, say, James Vince, who was a late call-up to the Big Bash that we've just been maligning and was hugely successful in the Big Bash, perhaps surprisingly so. But, you know, you talk about Keaton Jennings being found out. Is Vince going to nick off the third slip again and again?
I think Vince has had his chance, I really do. I think they go back to the Vince, and he seems to be there or there thereabouts all the time, but there's other players that need to be given a run. I mean, Ollie Pope scored 251 for Surrey against the MCC in Dubai, and, you know, I don't understand why players like that aren't featuring. I know we've been banging the drum for Rory Burns for probably about 3 years, and he finally got his chance, and he maybe didn't quite get there with the big scores. He scored a couple of 50s, I think he scored an 80-odd as well. But, you know, these players need to be in that side given a good run, and they can't keep going back to players like Jennings and Vince.
The trouble is, if you're not careful, you're going to end up with Surrey representing England, aren't you? I mean, let's just throw one in. What price, Trevor, Alex Stewart to replace Trevor Bayliss?
I don't know. I mean, it's very difficult without knowing how they fit into the county circuit and what respect there is. Funny things happen. Yeah, it's a possibility. Might as well have another Surrey man in the camp.
I thought Alex Stewart would be more likely to take Strauss's job, to be honest. I know they've given it to Ashley Giles, which I thought was an odd decision, given that he was fired as... whatever it was, chief selector, whatever he was before, a couple of years ago. To go back to Giles, I thought, was a slightly strange decision, and he's got big shoes to fill there.
Giles has got slightly broader experience in terms of a range of management roles, hasn't he?
Yes.
Did you see Strauss? They reckon he's going to come back to run Middlesex in the 100.
Oh, really?
In the 100.
Yeah.
Next year.
Yeah. I mean, he's had a rough time
poor
recently.
Chap.
It's terrible.
Yes, poor
terrible.
Chap.
But what a huge influence he's had on the England side, though.
And a positive positive one,
yeah,
I think.
Exactly.
However much we gripe about 73 for 7 or whatever it is this week. What an irony, Trevor. They go to Dubai to play MCC against the champion county end of March, and it rains after Pope gets 250. They can't finish.
You can't. Well, yes, you know, just make them feel at home, of course.
I can't imagine that they've got much drainage over there either to deal with that sort of weather.
Really. If you've ever been in Dubai when it rains, it is something else.
Yeah, I
yeah, it just sits on the surface.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Otherwise, they are pretty much. I did a game on the Global Academy, not on the Test ground, under lights, and everything else about those two grounds is just state of the art.
Yeah, I bet.
It is
stunning.
Superb. Superb, especially when it's 27 degrees at 10 o'clock at night and you're under the lights. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, they've got the weather, haven't they, over there for that? And they never do anything by half, do they? No matter what the sport is, if it's
money's
cricket,
no objective,
Grand Prix, whatever,
sport.
they do it properly. Don't
I'd
they?
Not want to be playing out there in their midsummer, mind.
No,
blimey,
no,
blow
no.
That.
Winter only out there.
Yes.
Anyway, yes, there is Ollie Pope in the wings. Any other names we're going to chuck around?
Well, what do we think about Joe Denley? He was a late call up to the England side, and he sort of came in on the back of the fact he could bowl a bit of leg spin. He last played for England, I think, in one day internationals, was it something like 10 years
ago? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. He seemed
very entertaining cricketer.
Yep.
Personally, I love watching him play and bowl, but I just don't see him stepping up too late. I think you've got to nurture certainly people younger than that to go. Where's the potential? Even if he makes the name for himself, it's what, 3 years maximum? Unfortunately,
gap,
I don't want to put him down, but I don't think it's the right call.
And of course, there's another name, isn't there, that is an ex-Reigate Priory player, Jason Roy. Now, Jason Roy, should he be called up to the Test team?
I would no longer hesitate. We've had so much hit and miss ever since Alistair Cook lost Strauss as his opening partner. It's been here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
Round every blooming copse and woodland and thicket and you name it. And I know people say, he bats in the middle order for Surrey. They put him up to three, didn't they, in that amazing game between our lot and your old lot at the very end of last season. Trevor, what a fantastic game of cricket between Surrey and Essex. I would give him the go, and my rationale for that would be going back to very different times and very different paces of cricket and all-day declaration cricket. I can hear dear old Harry Newton, Trevor, saying to me, I won't do the Bolton accent, saying to me, if you can get somebody to go in first, David, and he can get you 30 by 12 o'clock from an 11:30 start, you're on your way.
Yeah.
And I reckon if Jason Roy scored two quick hundreds in 10 innings, he might win you two Test matches.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that it's getting to the point now where they can no longer ignore the fact that he needs to be given a chance in that Test side. I think we're too quick to pigeonhole players.
Wasn't there that stat since Alistair Cook and Strauss parted company that there's been 19 or more? More than 19 different opening partners.
And that's the problem. They can't. They bring these players in, and they just can't seem to secure their place in the side. Well, maybe Roy would be another one, but I think when he's performing the way he does in one day internationals, he needs to be given a chance at some point.
And there is more crossover, isn't there? I know they say that the crossover is T20 into one day or 50 over cricket, but it's crossing over into ever since Steve Waugh, but certainly since Brendan McCullum, it's crossed over into Test cricket.
Yeah, and I think players like Keaton Jennings are really almost throwbacks to previous times. Test players now are, you look at players like Bairstow, Stokes, these players that's how they play cricket. They play it aggressively in all the formats. So to say Jason Roy is a limited overs player is potentially missing out on somebody who could be a massive addition to the Test side. I'm surprised Ed Smith hasn't gone down that route yet, to be honest, because he always comes across as somebody that's prepared to look at things from a slightly different angle.
I suppose you need the glue as well, though, talking earlier on about that first Test match in West Indies. Now, that turned out as it did because Jason Holder batted time.
Yes, yes he did. But as you said, at the end, he started opening
up. At the end.
But you're right, yes.
But,
yeah.
You know, too often England are 6 or 7 down, and there's no glue whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, you know, 7, 8, 9 can't get you out of the mire every time.
But I think that's why also it's worth England sticking with Rory Burns, because he has the potential to be a player who is capable of staying there. And if you've got someone like Roy and then Burns and those type of players in the side, it's a good balance, and it could potentially yield runs. But again, it's up to whether Ed Smith is prepared to take that risk.
While we're talking individuals, what do we reckon about Jofra Archer, gentlemen?
I've watched a game of his last week in the IPL. I didn't think he was that express pace. I mean, I was expecting him to be a bit quicker, a bit sharper, a bit more aggressive. And, you know, they're all working on this kind of slower ball, lengthened line. There's no real short pitch, up and around the grill type aggression. Well, I haven't seen that from him.
You're right. They do. There has been this sort of assumption that he's going to be bowling 90 mile an hour stuff, and you know he's going to be performing. But I don't know. Maybe he's one of these players that's been pushed too much. I mean, I know it's going back a long way, but do you remember when Graham Hick was touted as the next big thing for years and years and years, and then when he finally managed to get into the England side, he just didn't really perform as he could have done. Is Jofra Archer going to be the same?
Well, I think it goes to potential, doesn't it? He's a clearly got the potential, so why don't we try out quickly?
Yeah.
We'll find out one way or the other. But then you know, if it works, it works, great. If it doesn't, then you move on to next step.
Well, England, the selectors have got to provisionally name 15 players for the World Cup on the 23rd of April.
So I reckon he'll be in.
You think? In a 15-man squad?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Nasser Hussain said the same thing. He said he should be picked.
Yeah, I think he'll be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I mean, somebody else who did himself no favours and didn't just underperform but got injured. I know he's been back in the West Indies. David Willey did himself no favours at all going to the Big Bash.
Never been a big fan of David Willey. I don't know what it is. I just think that he's, to me, just always seems a sort of vulnerable player that can, he can turn it on, but more often than not doesn't. And I'm not sure he's got the temperament when you look at in some of those real pressure situations.
Let's return, if we may, because time is already fairly short. Let's return to something that Trevor said a while back, and the fact that the World Cup with the round robin is one game at a time. Everybody plays everybody else. And it's one bad game, two maximum, or you're done, isn't it? Mm. There's no real leeway. Is it even conceivable that England are not going to have at least one implosion in 10 games?
Yeah, well, that again, that's the risk, isn't it? England are being pushed so much as the favourites this time. Home World Cup, number one ranked team. You know, they've come on massively under Bayliss. But will it all be a bit too much? And as you say, they've only got
one bad day, and that's curtains, unfortunately.
We've seen players like Stokes fold under pressure before. I think it's a bit worrying. I don't think it's going to be as big of a walkover that the press and the media seem to think it will be. But
no, I think you've got a resurgent Australia as well. You know, they've got the two woodworkers back. I think will make a tremendous difference. I think providing the rest of the team are happy to have them back, and I think they're building bridges there. But I think, you know, they're my dark horses.
Yeah.
Oh, well, look at the way the women peaked at absolutely the perfect moment and blew us away, let's face it.
Yeah.
I think probably not much time to go into England women now, although everybody's trumpeting this run of 10 games unbeaten in India. But what went before didn't exactly fill anybody with the joys of spring, and they just folded in that. They didn't quite look the part all the way through that Women's World Cup, did they? And when it came to the final, they folded. Interestingly, it was Alyssa Healy rather than Elise Perry this time who was the leading light for your ladies in canary yellow, Australian gold, sorry.
Right.
That's going back even further. We probably not better go down that road. You mentioned Smith and Warner and the woodwork bench. Warner clearly raring to go in the IPL, Trevor.
Doing great guns at the moment, isn't he? So he's got something to prove. He's got the potential, you know. So I think it's going to be an interesting one. But it's the team that builds up gradually and peaks at the right time that you look at all the past ones.
Imran Khan, 1992.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly, yes. That's right. That's
and then
right.
Again, it rained in Dubai. If it wouldn't have rained that day, they'd have been out
exactly
of it.
Exactly right. That's correct. Yep.
Yeah, there's a little bit, quite a lot of fortune, isn't there, when the vagrants conditions of the English weather will certainly play a part.
What's the old saying? Fortune favours the brave, though. So, so there we have it. So that's perhaps the World Cup for now. Some talk that Smith may not play in the World Cup and may play county cricket instead to get himself ready for the Ashes.
Well, that's difficult, isn't it, when you've got one scheduled right before the other? So that'll be interesting to see if that happens.
Well, apparently there's a view that he's shot his bolt a bit in limited overs cricket. He's no longer the player that he was. Now he's a batter of time in Test cricket. And extraordinary, you know, for somebody who was a part-time leg spinner, and there he is, averaging more than anybody in history apart from Bradman.
And such a classic batting style.
Well, that's, yeah.
That's another story, isn't it?
That's old men talking,
yeah,
perhaps. What about, I mean, it may be that Surrey and Terence Botham has had something to do with this, because he's never shied away from controversy, but what about Bancroft skippering Durham in the Championship?
Yeah, that was a controversial move, wasn't it? I mean, you know, they're obviously having to replace Paul Collingwood, who retired at the end of last year, but he's going to captain their County Championship and one-day sides, coming straight off a nine-month ban. I think that's quite a brave decision by Durham to bring. I mean, I guess he'll bring in the crowds for good and bad. Some will come in to watch him play, some will come in to boo him, maybe, I don't know. But that was quite a big decision, I think, by Durham.
They're very brave, yes. Yeah.
Let's hope he brings his reinforced wirefronts. there you go. It's done. And that's right, isn't it? The same as in criminal law or anything else. You're found out, you serve your time. And
yeah, I mean, I don't know. There was a report in the Sydney Morning Herald that claimed four players were considering not playing when these players came back from the ban, that Pat Cummings, Josh Hazlewood, Nathan Lyon and Mitchell Stark allegedly were unhappy about coming back from their bans.
Pretty rapidly denied, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty rapidly denied, but whether that was a bit of stoking up the fire.
Correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that to do with them not playing in the last one day or in South Africa if
yes.
they were still picked?
I think it was, yeah.
Anyway, that's the World Cup, so Trevor's got Australia coming up on the rails, and the Ashes is going to be a contest, isn't it?
Well, it should be. I mean, it depends which England turns up. We thought England would roll over West Indies. They didn't. We would probably expect England to roll over the Australians, but I'd be very surprised if it's as easy as we think it might be.
I fancy us in England.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? And in the conditions, English conditions, you'd like to think that we'd be able to do that, but you just never know with England. You know, it's always a very difficult one.
I tell you, somebody else we haven't talked about, just thinking forward to prospects for the Ashes, not least. Mark Wood produced this one blistering spell in West Indies, but a little bit like you, Stuart, you know, Jofra Archer doesn't look to be bowling all that quick. He seems to have these flashes of inspiration, a la Willis down the hill at Headingley, 1981, and then revert to the sort of...
That's the way cricket works, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, how many games have you played where it's running along, nothing's really happening, and then something out of the ordinary happens, and that creates a short-term slide, and that's the beauty of the game, the unpredictability of it.
Plus also the fact that he played well in both Test and One Day, as he took a five for him the final Test, and he took four wickets in one of the One Dayers, so he was able to turn it on in both red ball and white ball cricket. So
yes.
Well, he's worked on his action, hasn't he? He's lengthened the run-up. They said that most of his injuries were caused by his very short, explosive run-up that he had. And you know, so Mark Wood, he kind of jumps around the crease as he comes into his into his stride, which does him no favours.
Yeah.
And he did that weird sort of half-pace backwards at the beginning of his run, and that's gone too. I'm going to throw one more. What do the Americans call it? A curveball. I'm going to throw one more. Let me ask you a question first. Are we picking to win the Ashes primarily this summer, or are we picking to develop the England team?
You win what's going. You aim for that first, and the other will follow if you do it the right way.
I think that they've got to be looking you've got to be picking to win the Ashes.
So if form is temporary and class is permanent, what about Ian Bell?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's always
too late,
wasn't it?
Too
yeah.
late.
I think the problem is where you slot these players in. I think if he's was he not injured?
He's
injured at the moment, isn't he? So he's coming off the back of an injury. So dependent on how he does in the County Championship, if he starts getting hatfuls of runs and there's a slot that becomes available through injury or through lack of form, well, why not? You're right, it's too late to pick him, but if we want to win the Ashes, and it's a difference between winning the Ashes and not winning the Ashes, then I think he should be.
Yeah, as an emergency fill in, yes, but if everyone else is fit, yeah, I don't see him featuring, unfortunately.
Ben Duckett got 250 against Cambridge MCCU.
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, there are players, there are a lot of players out there that are potentially, you know, could do well. But I think this summer we're building up towards what the England setup have been gearing towards for years, with Trevor Bayliss focusing on white ball cricket. And the World Cup, I suspect, will probably be, as much as it pains me to say, is probably more important to them, I think, this summer than the Ashes in many ways. I think that's what they'll be aiming to actually try and win. I mean, we want to win both, but I think that the England setup, given the choice, would rather win the World Cup than the Ashes, which I think is a shame. But
I've got 2 days, first and last, if it goes that long, 4 days, at the Lord's Test between England and Ireland. What about that?
Yeah, first ever 4-day test, isn't it, in England?
No, they played 4-day tests years ago.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah, but interesting development. They're bringing that type of Test cricket back.
Well, they're looking at it for some of the junior senior sides.
I have a point of contention, which is the David Lloyd point of contention is over rates and so forth. That, you know, you might have, 90 overs in a day. When do you get 90 overs in a day? Mm. Hardly ever. All the mucking around and so forth. That, you know, we're being cheated out of overs.
No doubt about that. Anyway, I shall be interested to see how that goes, and I shall be able to report back to you on breakfast in the new Pelham suite in the
Very
new
nice.
Warner stand.
Very nice.
Because a friend of mine who is a member has managed to get us breakfast there for the first day of the Lord's Ashes Test, and I've never been to an Ashes Test at Lord's.
That would be nice. So, that'll be good.
You know, that's one ticked off the bucket list. Let's return to something that you mentioned, and we certainly should mention before we finish, and that is the unfortunate dismissal of Joss Butler in the IPL by Ravi Ashwin. And I've got a little rider on the back of that. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, it was a very, very contentious incident. I think mancadding is always very, very controversial. The law states that basically that you can't, I think it says that the non-striker is out of his ground from the moment the ball comes into play to the instant when the bowler would normally have been expected to release the ball, and the bowler is permitted to attempt to run him or her out. The difficulty was it looked like the bowler had run up, stopped, waited for Butler to walk out of his crease and then taken the bails off. And I think at the point of which the ball would have been delivered, Butler was still in the crease. I think that's where the contention lies.
What do you reckon, Trev?
From experience, if you stop in mid-delivery stride, 99% of batsmen will be halfway down the wicket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fact of life. You walk with them, but they've got all those reviews and the spirit of the game. The captain could have intervened after watching the big screen.
Butler had been mancadded before. He should have learnt his lesson from last time.
No, because you walk with it. It's human nature.
Yeah.
I think you're right about that, Trevor, from long playing experience. Thoughts, Stuart?
For me, the rule is there to stop people taking too much ground. I don't think Butler in that occasion was taking too much ground. So I think a warning.
The interesting thing to me, although I've hung up the white coat, is that the onus has been changed in the law. The law now refers to a batsman backing up rather than a bowler attempting to run out the batsman. Mm. So it's shifted the onus to the batsman to behave himself. But it's a tricky one. And MCC, of course, sat plumb on the fence.
Mm.
They said they didn't think he had offended against the spirit of cricket, and then there was such a hue and cry the next day. Actually, yes, he did.
Were you allowed to review that?
I don't know. And it is the IPL, Trev, let's be fair. The rider that I was going to bring in was that it may even have been in the same game, I'm not sure, but it was Andre Russell, I think. A wild throw came, and it did him on the bounce in the field and went for 4 overthrows. And there was this great kerfuffle about whether the ball was dead or not, which clearly it wasn't. And I couldn't help, I think it was KKR, and as these players clustered around the umpire, all I could think of was, you remember that infamous photograph of Roy Keane and the Manchester United lots? It looked exactly like that.
Yeah, not a good look.
And if that's the way it's going, it is not a good look at all.
No.
So there we are. Anyway, fascinating times ahead, mancadding or not. And there's lots we didn't discuss, Tim, but that's not a bad 2 hours.
Well, no, not bad, considering that the season hasn't really got going yet properly.
To kick off, and just remind us, next month, Andy Tharp?
Next month we have Andy Tharp coming in as our pundit, and we've got Dan Feast coming in from Essex.
I shall be looking forward to that very much. Stuart Warren, chairman of Hawley Cricket Club, it's been a real pleasure to have you here for the first time in the studio, and I hope we'll see you again.
Yeah, I'd love to. You'd love to come back.
Trevor, the evergreen Trevor Stevens, always a pleasure.
Thank you, David.
We'll see you again soon. Thank you, gentlemen. Tim, it's been fun.
It has been fun, yeah. Been a good show today, and we've got more to come later in the summer. We're on the first Thursday of every month.
Yeah, indeed.
So we've got a lot of guests to come and a lot more cricket chat to come too.
That was On the Front Foot for April 2019, this no longer so brand new year. My thanks to Stuart Warren, to Trevor Stevens, to Tim Bowling across the other side of the panel, and we'll be looking very much forward to doing it all over again, and hearing particularly from Dan Feast from the inside of Essex County Cricket Club. That should be well worth a listen on the first Thursday evening in May at 7 o'clock. For now, all that remains for me to do is to thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it half as much as we did. And say goodnight.